This is a service of Advent lessons and carols, and it's unique to this parish, to this little corner of the world, because I wrote it. In this service, we look at the story of God through a huge sweep of time. We begin with this reading, a peek into God's heart at the beginning of creation. We recall, as people have for thousands of years, the thundering promises of the prophets. We hear words of yearning, sighed and sung and shouted by so many people of so many times and places. We often put all of these promises of God in the context of winning and losing. Especially we come to our houses of worship, like this one, hoping to hear that God's going to win. And in fact, I've summed up my theology about God's work with two words: love wins. On one level, yeah, this is true. But when we get too wrapped up in a system where the only outcomes are win, lose, and draw, you know, things can get kind of ugly. This week, the polarizing rhetoric of politics around the globe, which I quite foolishly thought could not get worse, has gone from merely divisive to vicious. Each side is bent on winning at any cost, and it is tearing us apart. It's tearing humanity apart. And though a tie score in football has been famously disdained as being as unsatisfactory as kissing your sister, the stalemate among members of our Congress means hundreds of thousands of workers were sent home to celebrate Christmas without pay. Or perhaps worse, work and not get paid. What do we call that system? Some tourists from Sri Lanka took pictures in front of a shuttered national park and commented to the reporter that the chaos in Washington reminded them of home. One said, "We have our own political mess. We didn't have a prime minister for a month. I thought it was like a third world country kind of thing." But it's the same story here. The United States, like a third world country. Yikes. Now, we could dig in and shout at each other more and more stridently, or we can look again. We can look again at how God is getting things done as the years roll on. No matter how hot our mess, God keeps sustaining the unworthy, providing for the ungrateful, and loving the unlovable. Apparently, God isn't actually focused on winning, but on inviting, welcoming, and healing. For every mass shooting, there are countless caregivers who serve out of love. For every heartless layoff to improve the corporate bottom line, there are millions of random acts of kindness and senseless beauty. For every angry driver terrorizing the road, there are people from Good Shepherd who stop at red lights to pause, to notice, and to wonder how God is showing up in that moment. I have gotten responses from, I've gotten screenshots of dashboards. I've gotten stories of seeing birds flying. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you missed my sermon a couple weeks ago. But the idea is, at a red light, instead of getting all peeved because you're late, just pause. Notice what's going on around you. And wonder, where is God present in this moment? Our service today is a series of lessons showing God at work in an ancient, eternal chain of events that's still being formed. After each reading, I will give a short reflection, and then we sing. Right? We sing. We sing. Right. So in the lesson that we just heard from Ronald, the me is divine wisdom, another name for God. In O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, we sing, O come, thou wisdom from on high, who orderest all things mightily. However the mechanics of creation work, what this reading teaches us is that the physical universe is and was and always has been the direct expression of who God is, the first day and today. The marvelous truth is that God is creating us this very moment, this very instant. God is rejoicing in the inhabited world and delighting in the human race. And the world and all of creation are the handiwork of a master artist. The Feast of the Incarnation isn't only about God taking flesh and dwelling among us, full of grace and truth. It's about all creation being an incarnation of God. God's very wisdom takes on tangible form in every physical entity, from galaxies to earthworms to us. Each one of us. What if we begin each day convinced that God paints every sunrise, orchestrates every creaturely migration, weaves all the rock formations, and sculpts all humans, even the ones who don't get it, even the ones we fear, even the ones we kill? Please sing with me, "Praise the Spirit in Creation." Emmanuel, as you probably know, means God with us in Hebrew. At Christmas, we celebrate the birth of Jesus, God with skin on. Then temptation is to think that maybe before the first Christmas, God wasn't here. God was out somewhere else, fishing maybe. But God has been coming from the outside in since the first day. And with each new baby, with each new creative, generative event, God is coming to be with us. God is desiring us. God is making us. The reading says that this child, this Emmanuel, this God with us, is working for the day when all babies live in safety. I want you to imagine that for a moment. All babies live in safety, not just the ones that are born in lovely suburban homes, but babies in Syria, in Uzbekistan, in China, in the slums of our cities. Every baby is born in safety and is treasured. That's what peace means, isn't it? Peace is when life and all that is in creation is treasured. When no one's a target for somebody else. Curds and honey, Isaiah talks about curds and honey. Curds and honey are foods that children eat. When pastures are full of contented cows and frisky goats and busy bees growing that have lots of plants to buzz around. You know our bees are dying? Our cows are treated like widgets. Goats are still pretty cute, though. And that's what God intends for Emmanuel and for all who are born. We can, like Ahaz, say that God's plan is none of our business. Or we can, like Isaiah, proclaim it and live it and look for it. That promise of Isaiah is from the 8th century B.C. I mean, it's almost 3,000 years ago. We look to our God to be our almighty counselor, our Prince of Peace. That's what we say that the everlasting Father means for his children. Now, God's going to establish it. Are we going to live into it? Or do we think that maybe we should fight it? Well, if you want peace, I think maybe we should stop fighting. Let's sing, "Praise We the Lord This Day." We expect great things from great people and great cities, but God has no respect for our expectations. God shows up in unlikely men and women in odd locations, in the mentally ill and the homeless and in the children, and in the people from cultures that frighten us, speaking languages we don't understand. Poet Lucy Shaw reminds us that the baby in whom the hopes and fears of all the years come together was born very, very little. physically, socially, politically. She says of his birth, a long leap, an incandescent fall from magnificent to naked, frail, small. Jesus did not have the credentials to be the Good Shepherd. He certainly wasn't a winner in this world. He was utterly defeated by the privileged religious and political elite. But as he said to Pontius Pilate, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight. My kingdom is from another place. Jesus' kingdom is not of this world, but it is most definitely in it. In the place Jesus' kingdom is from, life, not death, is the strongest power. Success is about reconciliation of enemies, not defeating them. And the most important people are motivated by selfless love, not by personal ambitions. So which kingdom do we want to be of? Please sing with me, A Little Town of Bethlehem. God laid out a vision, a promise to Zechariah, a child, a son at last. What does Zechariah do? He argues. He knows it's impossible. Now, last week we heard how Mary said, how can this be? Because, you know, I haven't done what you need to do. And the angel doesn't yell at her. She says, how is this possible? And the angel tells her how it is possible. I imagine if Zechariah, he didn't say, how is this possible? Because he knows how babies are made. What he says is, how can I be sure that you're not making a fool out of me? How can I be sure that this is so? And the angel goes, really? Really? Well, you can be sure because it's going to happen. You know what to do, Zach. Don't we do that too? We say we want justice and peace. But we know it's impossible. Just like Zechariah knew that him and Elizabeth having a baby was impossible. So let's just stay with what we know. Let's just stay with it. At least we know how to deal with it. You know, dance with the devil, you know. We can't seem to believe that God can do anything different. We give up before we even start. Oh, well, can't fight City Hall. Well, you know what? Yeah, you can. Those flashing lights out on Edgewater Drive are because I went to City Hall and I said, my old people need to cross the road without being hit by a car. And we have flashing lights. It's a little example, but folks, you can change the world. Or you can at least change a crosswalk. Note that Zechariah and Elizabeth went home and made fools of themselves, doing what you need to do to make a baby. Can you imagine that date night? What are you doing, Zechariah? In our world today, striving for justice, peace, dignity for all may be foolish. Let's do it anyway. It doesn't matter if we win. It matters that someone's life may be transformed for the better. Maybe someone you'll never know. Let's sing, Blessed Be the God of Israel. Well, Joseph is worse than a fool. He's a loser. In the judgmental eyes of his neighbors, Joseph is either marrying a woman who's been unfaithful to him, or his reputation as a righteous man is shot, because who's going to believe him when he says, I didn't do anything? What a no-win predicament God has put Joseph in. But instead of getting angry, and instead of railing at God being unfair, Joseph becomes a walking, talking miracle of God's grace, even though he will lose everything. He accepts God's invitation. He accepts God's invitation to be part of transforming everything simply by loving the unlovable Mary. People who believe in God's dream of a healed creation can do astonishing things that transform the world when they don't worry about what the neighbors will think. Please sing with me, "Come Now and Praise the Humble Spirit." Blessed is she who believes that the Lord will fulfill his promises to her. God invites Mary to be part of the plan to save the world. By the way, Jesus, Yeshua, means God is mighty to save, just in case you're curious, in Hebrew. Yeshua, God is mighty to save. God invites Mary to be part of God's plan to save the world. And just what did God promise to Mary? Well, the angel who came to her promised Mary that she would conceive and give birth to a son who will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David. Now, I don't know about you, but this promise sounds like she'd be a real winner. The mother of a great king and a cushy palace, right? I mean, check it out. David lived in a fantastic place, and the lesson we read just a little bit before that about David was all full of, you know, kingly monarchical power and glory. That would be kind of what I would expect if I heard that from the angel, but Mary's a little more amazing than I am, because she knows that she's being invited into something more than her own personal deliverance from insignificance and poverty. She doesn't sing about God as someone like Santa Baby, bringing her convertibles and yachts and platinum mines and rings. She sings about God's project of healing the entire world, of establishing a new kind of kingdom where all hearts are healed, where God gives good things to good people and also gives good things to bad people, to the unworthy, the ungrateful, and the unlovable. People just like us, maybe? As the gifts are given and the healing happens, one day God will crush the tools of violence, and we'll be just fine with that because we won't need them anymore. That's the day when we we'll all know that, yes, love wins, but no one is lost. Please sing with me, "My Soul Cries Out." Please stand.